said. Run. Fela drove the priests on ahead. Without them, she'd never complete the necessary rituals. They ran across the stone bridge, Shom ahead of her queen with the expanded torch held out in front. The sound of cracking rock echoed around the chamber, and as they reached the far side, Fela felt movement beneath her feet. Her final few steps were sickening, the very land rocking underneath her. And as she leaped, she felt everything beneath her opening up and falling away. Shom and the two priests made the opening on the far side of the vast cavern. Fela had no choice but to leap, reaching out her arms to Shom, who grabbed her and dragged her to safety. Behind, the stone bridge crumbled and fell, and Helene went with it, even plummeting to a terrible, unimaginable doom. The diminutive silent kept her voiceless vow. Thousands of tons of stonework crashed down into darkness. It was some time before they heard the first splashes. "Nothing can hurt Dakur," Per Ristola whispered. Fela could find no words. Still reeling from her touch on that alien mind, she nodded at Shom to lead the way. The four of them continued in silence. On their underground journey from Palace Hill to Temple Hill, they encountered three more obstacles designed to prevent easy passage, and each time Fela moved them aside or neutralized them. One was a glimmering passageway filled with a webbing of hundreds of deadly ghast spiders, which she purged with a blazing burst of fire, channeling the great god Charin. It was so powerful that the stone itself cracked and glowed afterward, and the carbonized remains of spiders disintegrated beneath their feet as they passed by. The second was an illusion, a wall of blood mirroring their faces. Fela tumbled a fall of splintered stone along the passage that shredded the image and opened up the path beyond. The third obstacle might have been the greatest, and the one about which Fela had most doubt. The chasm was too wide to ford, and so deep that she believed it might not have a bottom at all. By her estimation, they were at the foot of Temple Hill, and the idea that such a place existed beneath that most holy part of Lartha would have been enough to drive much of the population mad. While Per Ristolo held the torch, Shom heaved a heavy rock and hurled it out into the darkness. It quickly disappeared beneath them, and the four people, Queen, Silent, two unwilling high-order priests, listened for the impact with breath held. None came. No splash, no crack of rock upon rock. Fela wondered how far down the bottom would have to be to prevent the echo of the rock's impact reaching them. A mile? Two? She didn't have much time to contemplate it, for rising from the abyss came a darkness so profound that Fela thought she might be able to grab hold of it. The torch's effect was minimal, however much she used magic to boost the flame. Darkness threatened to smother them all. She thought of the gods unnumbered, and for just a moment their existence did not seem quite so easily dismissed as a story to frighten children. Per Ristolo began praying to the four, but Fela grabbed his arm and spun him around, holding him so close to the edge that even she doubted her own intent just for a beat. "You pray to me," she shouted, and her voice echoed deep and long, as if taken up by other things and mimicked endlessly into the night. The old priest's eyes went wide at such blasphemy, and his voice fell silent. "So now we go back," Per Stellan said. "Back?" Fela asked. "No. Forward."
"Across that?"
"Of course." "But..."
Fela stood at the very edge of the ledge and looked down into nothing. One shove from any of them would have sent her plummeting. But she knew that she was safe. She knew that now the two high-order priests respected and feared her enough. As for Shom, she had served Fela since the first time she'd asked her to. Of course she had. The Silent served the Queen, and Fela had been bearing the mantle of Queen since before her mother raved into death. Across, Fila said. She summoned the magic within, and it was a strange relationship, as if the magic was its own thing and would translate what she required with no need of explanation. Charin again, this time the Charin of secrets. And then she knew. She did not have to imagine the bridge across the gulf. It simply was. Clear, only slightly more solid than the darkness. There was no sign that it had appeared. Yet still she took her first step out across the void. Her trust was complete, even when she heard a small, startled sound from Shom. Perhaps the first noise she had ever heard from the Silent's mouth. Fila's foot landed on something solid and she continued walking, out across the abyss and toward the far side that was still out of sight. Bring the torch, she said. She heard the high priests following her and knew that Shom would be behind them. They crossed, and upon entering a new network of tunnels, she at last smelled something familiar. Magic on the air. The tombs were close, and her destiny was closer still. Chapter 17. Somehow on their march from the palace down toward the foot of Temple Hill, Deimos Calistrate, warrior, sailor, prisoner, slave, and now warrior again, found himself in joint command of the assault upon the Temple of Four. Commander Curtness of the City Guard had once been a friend of the Calistrate family. That friendship had withered and died as Linos Calistrate's corpse was rotting. But the respect he held for Deimos as a fighter was still evident, and it emerged once again as they made their way through the Larthen streets toward their target. How do you see this going? Curtness asked. In two phases, Deimos said. First, a detachment I sent ahead from the Apex's house will launch a diversionary assault on the main temple gates, which will mean climbing Temple Hill, a steep hall, Curtness said. True, a climb that will not go unnoticed by those allied to Euphraxia and the priesthood. They'll be ready when the detachment arrives at the gates, and that bitch Euphraxia will believe that is our main assault. Deimos and a small contingent from the city guard had already visited Euphraxia's official residence close to the foot of Palace Hill. As expected, the Apex had not been home, but while her staff was lined up against a wall, shivering in terror, Deimos had led a thorough search of the place. Some of the slaves had been surprised to see Deimos of the Spiza basements, now dressed in a guard uniform too small for him, and wielding a second-hand sword. He'd considered liberating them, but that was not his mission. Also, it would have been frowned upon by the other guards. But maybe he didn't need to physically free them. He felt the slaves' eyes burning into him as he left them behind. And he sensed their thoughts. If he can get out, why can't we? You can. You just need to want it enough to risk your lives. In a damp but clean room in one of the basements, Deimos had found the body of the Praegis, laid out for burial. In another, where he had spent many hours scrubbing and scraping at a chimney, the remnants of a fire still glowed a deep, angry orange. Among the ashes, bones, mouse. Thrown into a chimney and burned without ceremony. She had beaten him, hated him, and been his friend many years ago, and again so recently. Such a friend that he undoubtedly owed her his life. He'd stood staring at the ashes and bones until a guard tapped him on the shoulder and confirmed what he already knew. The Apex isn't here. All the way out of Euphraxia's house and its extravagant grounds, Deimos had craved finding the Apex and burying his sword in her wretched, hypocritical body. Their phage will be ready for us, Curtness said now, startling Deimos from his grim recollections. If they even exist, Deimos said. You doubt them. They feel like a story to frighten children. He shrugged. Then I'm a child, Curtness said. There are already rumors. What rumors? The soldiers pushed through a crowded market square, 50 city guards and an unknown number of silent accompanying them. Deimos caught sight of the women warriors now and then, moving with the guards yet not part of them. He was surprised that the silent had not moved out to undertake their own missions. Perhaps that would happen soon, or maybe they really would join forces. When Queen Lysandra called for the Bajamin extermination, a detachment was sent to the Temple of Four, Curtness said. They've not been seen again, and the temple's gates have been closed ever since. You must have investigated. Of course. But the old priests and novices who were there at the time knew nothing. Of course not, Deimos said. He frowned, walking on in silence. Uncertainty nipped at his heels about what they were doing here, and his part in it. Queen Fila's orders were clear. Track down and kill any members of the faith who were allied with Euphraxia against her. It was Deimos' word that had inspired the queen's rage, and her orders for an assault. And the result of that word would be, eventually, his freedom to flee Lartha with Mirin. That was all he wanted. There was nothing else. Lartha and Quandis could shake themselves apart for all he cared, so long as the one he loved was by his side. Home was where Mirin was, and if that ended up being one of the islands of the Ring, or even beyond, then he would accept that with good grace, and even grow to love it. He had been out at sea for many years under Admiral Holardi's command. He knew that as well as wild, violent places beyond the Ring, there was also beauty. Yet Fila's manner troubled him. The idea of murdering priests did not sit well with him, even though it was under the orders of the Queen. Euphraxia, on the other hand, he would be happy to put that bitch to the sword. His bones ached, his muscles were torn, wounds and bruises were still caked in blood from the beatings she had put him through. If turning against her was his last act serving Quandis, he would leave a happy man. So with a detachment acting as a diversion at the main temple, we go in through Yaris Teeg, Curtness said. Of course, Deimos said. The novices won't fight. We gather them and the priests, give them the ultimatum, and kill those who ally themselves with the Apex. People were hurrying out of their way. Deimos saw a silent dart by to his left, flitting behind a row of market stalls, hardly slowing even though she dodged through a huddled, harried crowd. You seem comfortable with killing unarmed people, Deimos said. In service of the queen, of course. Even this queen? He thought, but dared not say. The pardon Fila promised covered his past crimes and treasons. Not any new ones. They passed through the market square and entered the maze of streets and alleys that led up a gradually steepening slope to the foot of Temple Hill. Soon Yaris Teeg was visible across an area of raised planters, crops of various types nurtured from the ground by the novice priests. The city guard soldiers knew their orders, and the dozen silent who marched with them would fight their own fight. Deimos called a halt. He looked up at the hill's summit, where the grand and massive Temple of Four poked its towers at the blue sky. Sunlight gleamed from the towers, but part of the view was hazed by a slowly drifting cloud of smoke. Its source was not visible, but seemed to be somewhere close to the main entrance into the temple. Perfect timing, Commander Curtness said. And with a signal from him, their assault on Yaris Teeg and the great mass of Temple Hill began. Still shaken, Blaine barely heard Persantiger as the teacher came across the courtyard toward him. From the look in his eyes, the priest must have called to him several times before he finally looked up. My apologies, Blaine said. My mind was elsewhere. Yes, I see, Persantiger said. In the Admiral's message, no doubt. What is it that has upset you so? A sister I once thought was dead is no longer, Blaine said. Persantiger frowned. Admiral Holliarty sent you a message. Blaine frowned. His senses were heightened by magic, and now he could hear the surreptitious padding of feet, smell the sweat of many, and taste violence on the air.
"Something's coming," Blaine said, looking at the closed courtyard gates.
Persantiger cocked his head and listened to noises from beyond the walls. His confusion changed to sadness.
"I feared it would come to this,"
he said. From beyond the wall came a shouted order, sharp and high. Over the gate and stonework appeared several grappling hooks, snagging and pulling tight.
"Queen Phila makes her move."
With one final baleful glance at Blaine, Persantiger hurried to the center of the courtyard. He scratched at the air with clawed hands, calling his phage to him once more. Blaine looked up the steep hillside toward the grand Temple of Four, its spires piercing the sky, and saw that smoke was rising around them. When he looked back at the gate, six phage had materialized around Persantiger. The robed specters stood ready for battle. The air sparked with a powerful static and the promise of violence.
"Go and hide, Blaine. You and the others are not ready for this," Persantiger said.
A swirl of conflicting motivations twined inside Blaine. He knew what he wanted for his people, and that meant Phila had to fall. For now, his interests aligned with the pact he'd made with Euphraxia. But he knew that would not last much longer. Two, his sister was on her way, doubtless with expectations of her own. And Persantiger wanted him to run. If he ignored the old man, if he stayed and fought, he felt certain that he'd unleash the magic he'd acquired. Persantiger would learn his secret. But Blaine no longer cared. He was done with hiding who and what he was. His time was now. Deimos ran across the open garden area with the other 50 city guards. They moved quietly, yet the silent were quieter. The warrior women reached the wall before the first of the guards, and as grappling irons were heaved up and over the gates and walls, the silent were already climbing. Deimos grabbed a rope and pulled himself up. A few weeks before, he would have completed the climb in moments with only a small amount of effort. But his body was weakened by abuse and malnutrition, and he had to grit his teeth and concentrate to avoid failing at this first obstacle. He had been tasked with killing Euphraxia for the Queen, and he had to focus every ounce of his strength and determination to succeed. His and Mirren's future depended on it. To his left and right, other soldiers climbed faster than he did, reaching the head of the wall or gate and dropping down the other side. Several silent had already flowed over the wall, and from beyond he could hear the noises of combat, clashing swords, muffled shouts, and the unmistakable sound of steel cleaving flesh. Deimos reached the top of the wall just beside the gate and its wide stone posts. He caught his breath for a moment, resting over the wall on his stomach and looking down into the wide courtyard beyond. His caught breath fled as shock and fear winded him. "Phage," he whispered, because there could be no other explanation for what he saw. They seemed to stand, but they moved as if in flight, shimmering in and out of sight, translucent wraiths with solid swords in their hands. The first few guards had been cut down and were bleeding across the cobbles. One was crawling, trying to reach her dropped sword, even though her severed hand still gripped it a dozen paces from her stump. Another was holding in his guts as he whispered to the sky. Toward the rear of the courtyard stood an old priest. Beside him stood a young novice who looked like a Bajuman. A doorway opened, and several more novices streamed out, all of them carrying long pikes with cruel spikes on their tips.
"Come on, Calistrate," Curtness said along the wall from Deimos.
He was standing, hefting a small crossbow and taking aim. He fired, the bolt passing through one of the shapes and ricocheting off a building.
"Earn your fucking freedom."
He leaped from the wall, landed in a roll, and was up and attacking a phage with three other soldiers. Deimos drew his sword and jumped, bending his knees and rolling sideways as he landed. Standing, he found himself face to face with an indistinct figure. It was robed, partially transparent, long hair escaping the hood and drifting in defiance of the still air, limbs moving with grace and speed, and in each hand it carried a short, thick sword. The weapons looked less opaque. When one swished in an arc toward his head and Deimos parried, the impact jarred through his hand and up his arm. He took a step back and the phage came for him, swinging both swords in a whirlwind of steel that hissed and whistled at the air. Deimos struggled not to trip over his own feet, letting his mind settle and allowing instinct to take over. He was confident in his abilities, though troubled by his current weakness. He pushed that doubt aside, though. Anxiety in a sword fight would get him killed, allowing his natural talents to steer the fight, to defend, and to go on the offensive was the only way to win. If there was a way to win against a spirit beast such as this. He ducked two more lashes of the phage's swords and stepped forward, swinging his own long blade into his enemy's legs. It howled, the noise strangely distant, as if from across some invisible divide, and took a step back. Deimos glanced at his sword. It was stained with shadow, swirling things like fluid worms that quickly faded and then vanished from the polished blade. He didn't have much time to wonder at it, as the phage stepped sideways and came again, seemingly uninjured and not at all affected by his blade passing through its legs. Not fair, Deimos thought. And then he was joined in battle by one of the Silent. The woman stepped in front of him and shoved him back, and he bridled at being cast aside. He hefted his sword and went to step into the fray once again, but what he heard and saw next froze him to the spot. The phage roared. It was a high, ululating scream that tore through to Deimos' core, scratching at his ears like nails on stone, reverberating through his spine and ribs. And the fury and rage on the creature's face was almost enough to drive him to his knees with a sense of hollow, empty hopelessness. He thought, "We're all going to die." The Silent darted forward and lashed out with her sword. Still screaming, the phage embraced her with its ghostly arms and turned sharply, throwing her back against the courtyard wall she had just jumped from. She struck stone with a sickening thump, but instantly dropped, rolled, and attacked the phage once more. Swords clashed, blood splashed from a wound across the Silent's shoulder. The phage staggered to the left and fell to its knees, then jumped up again without any apparent effort, fending off more swordplay from the Silent and burying one of its blades in the woman's right thigh. She hissed in pain, and Deimos darted in from behind. He plunged his sword into the phage's chest, feeling little give as the blade passed through and almost impaled the Silent in its tip. The phage turned to face him. Deimos held on to the sword and tugged it out, shaking shadowy dregs away and stepping back. "How the fuck do you die?" he said. As the phage came at him one more time, the Silent took a giant leap on her one good leg and slashed her sword through its neck. The spirit screeched again, even louder and more unbearable than its first furious cry, fingernails across Deimos' skull. It dropped its remaining sword and reached for its throat, even as its head tilted from its shoulders and rolled across the ground. The scream continued. Deimos went to his knees, hands over his ears, trying to scurry away as the being settled onto the cobbles and melted down to an argument of shadows and sunlight. The Silent tugged the sword from her thigh, but Deimos could already see that the wound was infected with something deadly. The Silent saw too. Trails snaked away from the ugly wound, a network of darkness beneath her skin that seemed to follow veins both large and small. The blood that flowed was speckled with blots that expanded and turned her blood from red to black. She looked up at Deimos, blinked, took a few unsteady steps toward another enemy, then dropped down dead. Deimos snatched up his sword, shedding his shock to take stock of the situation. "Take their heads!" he shouted,
A dozen guards were down, and two more fell as he watched, slashed open by phage swords, wounds and blood darkening with the toxic shadows those things spread. Thus far failing to smash the gates, more guards poured over the wall, and while the silent engaged the phage, the guards skirted around the edges of the courtyard. Deimos went with them. Commander Curtness was at their forefront, and he was the first to reach the small group of novices. They had spread out around a doorway leading into the first buildings of Yaris Teague, holding a loose protective formation as if to keep the soldiers out. They were almost naked, shivering, yet determined.
"This doesn't need to happen," someone shouted.
It was the old priest, still standing at the rear of the courtyard with a Bajamin novice beside him. The novice caught Deimos's eye, and Deimos saw something in him that he didn't like. A defiance he had never seen in a Bajamin before. A confidence, as if he knew a dangerous secret he was eager to share.
"State your allegiance to the Queen," Curtness said.
The fighting had paused for a moment.
"Let us pass into the temple, and then perhaps the violence might end."
"This is sacrilege," one of the novices said.
"Jemmy,"
the Bajamin warned.
"This is holy ground,"
the woman called Jemmy said.
"We serve the Four first and foremost, and what your queen is trying to do."
Curtness and three other guards stepped toward the six novices, swords held up. The novices prodded forward with their pikes. Curtness laughed.
"I serve the queen first and foremost," he said,
and he lashed out with his sword. One of the novices fell, pike splintered and chest open to the ribs. The others cried out and backed away. All but the one called Jemmy. She hefted her pike and threw it at Curtness. He knocked it aside and darted toward the novice.
"No!"
the Bajamin priest roared. Deimos felt something in the air. The fighting had started again across the courtyard. Shouts, grunts, the clash of swords, screech of phage, the thud of bodies hitting the ground. But now there was something more. The ground seemed to be shaking beneath his feet. The air vibrated, as if with the echoes of the phage's awful screams. The sun shimmered high above them, sending waves of heat across the courtyard that stretched his skin and dried his eyes.
"What's this?"
Deimos muttered. Curtness grabbed Jemmy by the robe, lifted her from her feet, and prepared to run her through with his sword. The Bajamin shouted again,
"No!"
The ground around Commander Curtness erupted. Cobbles burst from their beds, thudding upward into his groin, chest, face. He dropped the novice and she fell back. The others dragged Jemmy to safety as Curtness was battered and pelted with heavy stones from all directions, every one of them leaving its mark. Several city guard rushed in and dragged him back, and only then did the stones stop flying. The moment they did, though, a single figure dashed across the courtyard toward Deimos, sword out. He turned, ready to kill the madman loping toward him, until the man lifted his head, and Deimos saw his face and recognized him immediately.
Thistle!
The sailor had once fought by his side as a part of Daria's crew. Now Thistle reached him and turned, sword in hand, ready to fight at his side again.
"What are you doing here?"
Deimos demanded, though he was glad to see his comrade.
"Fighting first, story time later," Thistle replied.
But the fighting had entered a lull. As if at a silent signal, the phage pulled back to the edges of the courtyard, leaving the city guards and Silent standing among the dead and dying. The old priest stared aghast, not at the carnage being wrought around him, nor at the inexplicable eruption, but at the Bajamin standing by his side.
"Blaine,"
the priest shouted.
"What have you done?"
But the man called Blaine was not listening. He had taken the woman, Jemmy, in his arms and looked her over, checking for injuries. Deimos nudged Thistle, and the two of them stepped back toward the closed gate and wall.
The air thrummed with a strange energy, a potential that vibrated in Deimos' bones and ached in the roots of his teeth. "Back!" he shouted. But even as the silent and few remaining guards obeyed his panicked command, he saw Euphraxia emerge from a door at the courtyard's far corner. Shock etched upon her face, her gaze instantly shifted to the Bajuman. She smiled. "Good, Blaine," she called across the courtyard. "Good." Everything came into sharp clarity for Deimos with those words. 40 paces away stood the woman he needed to kill. His need was rational, because it was what Fila wanted, and Euphraxia's death would mean his and Mirren's freedom from this mad, degenerating place. Yet it was also emotional, because this was the woman who had so enjoyed his fall from grace, and encouraged his beatings and tortures at the hands of poor dead Mouse. Killing Euphraxia would end this part of his life, and launch him into a fresh new beginning. As Deimos took a step forward, though, the whole courtyard erupted into a maelstrom of smashed stones and crackling heat, swirling up in a widening spiral that swept up a silent and tore her to shreds, blood, flesh, and bone adding to the chaos. "Run!" someone shouted, and Deimos hated the cowardice in that voice. Yet he knew that was their only option. The Bajuman, Blaine, was the center of this, and although there was nothing visible, Deimos could sense the waves of energy radiating out from him. He didn't understand what was happening, but survival instinct needed no understanding. Clearly he wasn't the only one confused, as Deimos noticed the old priest beside Blaine had taken a step back, watching with his mouth agape. The only one who seemed okay with everything was still framed in the darkened doorway. Euphraxia, beaming with delight. She caught Deimos' eye, and rather than a look of anger at his escape, her grin widened. In it he saw a promise of worse pains to come, and he knew that Euphraxia believed she had already won. "Not yet," he thought. Deimos and Fissel turned and ran for the walls. Other guards and a few of the silent went for the closed gates, and the maelstrom closed in on them and snatched them up, smashing bodies against stone and wood. Blaine's focus on them allowed Deimos, Fissel, several silent, and the bruised and bleeding Curtness to climb the walls. It was difficult finding hand and footholds in sheer masonry, but fear drove Deimos on. Fear and rage at the grin Euphraxia had sent his way. "It's far from over," he thought, reaching up and grabbing one of the grappling hooks, hauling himself up onto the head of the wall and glancing back only once. The courtyard was a swirling tornado of dust and stones, blood and bodies, dropped weapons and smashed buildings. Through the storm he could make out those who had done this to them. Novices, priests, and apex alike, holy people who had defeated the silent and the city guard. The phage were still there, little more than shimmers on the air, but the magic of the High Order had turned out to be even deadlier. His mind reeled at the power that crackled in the air, at the presence of magic he'd never truly believed in. But there was no time to assess reality now. Feelings of awe and wonder would have to wait until the fight was done, if he survived. Deimos dropped from the wall and landed hard. Fissel came next, and then Curtness, who landed beside them, staggering. The commander touched a bloody welt on his forehead, but he still looked strong, hardened by combat. With a nod from Curtness, they ran, not looking back. As they sprinted down the street, Deimos knew that a balance of power had shifted. What they had witnessed in the past 5 minutes would be spoken about across Qandis for years to come. He hoped they would live that long. Behind them, a loud boom echoed, and he risked one last look. The gates of Yaris Teague had burst open, and a dozen raised planter beds across the gardens broke apart and became part of the storm. With no destination in mind, Deimos ran for his life. Blaine had never been looked at like this before. With disgust, yes, and hatred, and sometimes a sort of hidden pity from people who didn't hate Bajuman but could not bring themselves to like them. Even Jemmy, who had overcome her hatred for Bajuman to become his friend and then his lover, seemed frightened of him. He'd saved her life and then held her close, but now she stepped back from him, gaze uncertain. "This is what you've been hiding?" she asked quietly, looking around at the scattered dead. He could only nod. Jemmy looked toward Persantiker, as if their teacher had the answers to the questions swirling in her mind. But it was Apex Euphraxia who walked past her and stopped just a few feet away from Blaine, staring at him with what he thought must be fear. When she spoke, he realized it wasn't fear at all. It was respect. "I've never dreamed that anyone could harness the magic as quickly and fully as you have," the Apex said, "and a Bajuman at that." He didn't mind her mention of his race. He was proud. "And perhaps there's something in that," she mused. Around them, the courtyard of Yaris Teague was a battlefield, but one whose battle had been distinctly one-sided. It was difficult to see how many dead were there, smashed apart as they were. It was grisly and sickening. But Blaine felt a strange distance from what he had done. It was as if he was viewing painted images of a story of his deeds, not the true aftermath. He was all there, yet something protected him against the effects of his deeds. Perhaps it was magic. If so, he welcomed its protection. Though Jemmy held back the other novices gathered around, along with Persantiker, they looked at him with a sort of awe, and with fear. He welcomed both. Except from Jemmy. Blaine didn't want her to be afraid. He wanted to go to her, tell her that this was what he'd always wanted, this strange and dreadful power that might enable him to save his people at last. Before he could move, Euphraxia grabbed his arm. "Come with me," she said. "And you, Persantiger?" He looked to Jemmy, who simply nodded. There was no denying the Apex. So Blaine looked away and walked with Euphraxia into a doorway leading from the courtyard. With most of the destruction out of sight, he could almost pretend none of it had happened. "They'll be coming back," Persantiker said. "Eventually," Euphraxia said. "But that's not my main fear. Phila will be going for the tombs, I have no doubt." "She's been down there more than I have," Blaine said. "And she has High Order priests aiding her in the rituals." "We have to stop her. If she fulfills her ambitions, then her power will be greater than mine," Blaine asked. Euphraxia smiled at him as if speaking to a child. "Yours is nothing," she said. She frowned, glancing up the hill at the silhouette of the Temple of Four far above them. "They'll have attacked the main temple as well, though I'm sure they'll have been repelled for now. I must go to the temple and descend into the tombs." "Apex, I'll go with you," Persantiker said. "We'll take all the High Order priests who have at least a touch of magic, and we'll fight her at the temple, or beneath it. Perhaps combined we can combat any threat the Queen presents."
"Perhaps," Euphraxia said, "and I agree. We must go to the Temple of Four and take the battle to her. But while Phila desires magic, she will also use her forces to take control of Lartha. All those opposing her will be killed, and that includes any priests or novices."
She looked at Blaine.
"I'm not a good person, Blaine. I can't pretend to be that."
"Apex," Persantiger breathed. She ignored his brief expression of surprise.
"But I'm nowhere near as bad as I fear Phila can be."
"Apex, my sister," Blaine said.
He trailed off. It felt so unreal, the message he'd received, that he wondered whether it had all been a dream. He pulled the crumpled paper from his pocket and unrolled it. Not a dream, then. He held it out to Euphraxia and saw her eyes widen as she read the message. "Admiral Daria Hollarty," Euphraxia said in wonder, staring at the paper as if it could not be real. She looked up at him. "Admiral Hollarty is your sister, a Bajuman." Blaine nodded.
"I can go to meet her. Tell her what has happened here."
"Yes, do that," Euphraxia said.
"We can only hope that Admiral Hollarty's loyalties will be on the side of Qandis, not its mad queen."
She raised one corner of her mouth into an almost smile.
"It seems that after centuries of being unseen, the Bajuman are about to make their mark."
His heart swelled. That was everything he had always wanted. Inside, like a living thing, the heat of magic pulsed in time with his heartbeat. Perhaps with Daria's help, he might be able to complete what he had begun and become the true Kijtal. Not a myth, but a real savior for his people. A new legend.
Chapter 18. In the labyrinth beneath the city of her birth, the city she had always been meant to rule, Fila felt her heart swell with wonder. Since her earliest days, she had whispered through the walls of the palace, had pressed her ear to cracks and listened to intimate secrets with the hope of unraveling the mysteries of her world and of the people she encountered each day. Yet even that Fila, with all her years of puzzle-solving and stealth, and the keen mind her mother had helped to hone, would never have been able to navigate her way through the traps and ruins and switchbacks of the tunnels deep beneath the palace. The High Order priests had done their work admirably, centuries ago, making it much simpler to reach the tombs from Temple Hill than from the palace. They'd placed obstacles and diversions and snares and frustrations in the way, so that anyone would be turned back. Anyone but her. Fila had High Order priests with her, but even Purrestola was not old enough to remember how to solve this perilous maze alone. He and Purrestellan had their little magics and certain wisdoms and memories. But Fila breathed magic. Unlike members of the High Order, she had pledged herself wholly to each of the four, not only one, and she could feel their presence in a way the others seemed unable to. Though the priests helped, the four called only to her, luring her onward through the maze as if they desired her among them, nearly as much as she wished to be there. "Do you still believe I've gone too quickly?" she asked, swollen with pride and joy. "Do you still doubt that the blood of the four flows within me, that I am destined to inherit their power?" They stood in the golden glow of impossible light that shone from cracks in the ceiling overhead, with no source she could identify. Purrestola and Purrestellan stepped up behind her to take in the same view, and she heard the old man's wheezing breath. Magic had kept him alive, but after 200 years, his body had worn down. Behind the two High Order priests, Shom lingered in the shadows. "You want an honest answer?" Purrestellan said, her ruined eye socket seeming to stare even more balefully than her remaining eye. Fila gazed down at the ruin below her, a stone tower built by the first people before the gods came to this land, had fallen on its side, collapsed into the world. Water flowed in a stream that passed on either side of it, and through its throat, spilling out windows from which the first people had once gazed upon the Seven Hills. She wondered what Lartha had looked like then, what it had been called in their language, and how those people would have appeared to her. Other wreckage of ancient architecture lay there, including a stone bridge broken in half. The last tunnel had led here, to this ledge,
overlooking the ruined tower and bridge. Stone slabs had been laid like stairs down to the broken bridge. 50 yards from its end, water spilled from the ceiling in the silver curtain she had come to know in these past weeks. Beyond the falling water sat the familiar shapes of the tombs of the four, on their large square dais, though she had never seen them from this angle before. No one living had stood upon this ridge until now. The queen turned to smile at Per Stellan.
Go on, priest. Tell me your truth.
The woman of the ring nodded slowly, meeting her gaze without fear. You have a natural affinity for magic. Your mother had it as well, though she could not hold the reins of it, muddled with Spiza as she was. You've done well thus far. I've sworn loyalty to you, and I'll keep that vow. But what you're asking us to do is lunacy. The magic of the gods still emanates from their tombs and seethes within their remains. These rituals will open a channel within you so that magic will flow into you directly, and without any hope of controlling it. I don't know whether you will receive it all. It's possible there is no end to the power that still simmers within the four, but you will not be able to contain it. There were sorcerers, ancient, even before they were gods, and there were four of them. You are but one. Phyla sneered by reflex alone. She wanted to strike the woman down. Had she not needed Per Stellan, she might have had Shom kill her on the spot. But she wasn't so naive that the words didn't resonate within her. A bell tolling in her skull. And once struck, no bell could be unstruck. And because of that, Phyla, queen of Quandis and head of the faith, hesitated. Magic prickled her skin, and everywhere she looked she saw the sparkling blue stars, the glittering energy that bound the world together. Coupled with this seemingly impossible new realm, the hesitation should have frayed her nerves. And it did, a little. But it also gave her a strange new confidence. If she could still feel doubt, then she had not gone mad. She had not become her mother.
Per Ristolo, she asked, turning to the ancient priest. Do you feel the same?
He still stood at the ridge, gazing down at the ruins and the falling water and the tombs with a serene expression on his face.
Not anymore,
he replied, turning to smile at her.
I had my doubts, but they have been erased.
Per Stellan stiffened. Magic unbound, uncontrolled, destroyed the first city.
Legends, Per Ristolo began.
Legends that lay in ruins around us, Per Stellan growled, throwing her arms wide to take in the broken bridge, the fallen tower.
Phyla felt a ripple of anger, but Per Ristolo reached his fellow priest before she could. The old man put his hand on Per Stellan's shoulder and gazed into her one eye.
You did not come down here to stop now.
I came down here because my queen commanded it, and you, Per Ristolo, came down here because Her Majesty threatened to kill everyone you've ever loved.
Nonsense, Per Ristolo said. If what you fear comes to pass, they will die anyway. I came because this is their best hope for survival, and for ours. And, confess, sister, you came because a part of you wonders what will happen. A part of you yearns to know if the age of the four can begin anew.
Per Stellan hung her head. In the shadows, Shom started forward, but Queen Phyla gestured for her to be still. After a moment, Per Stellan exhaled and met Per Ristolo's gaze.
I confess, I am afraid, the woman said.
Queen Phyla took her hand, kissed her cheek.
Fear is wisdom, priest.
Have courage.
The four are with us. With me. I can feel it in my blood.
This was the only truth, pure and real. The lure of the gods, the song that seemed to hum in Phyla's heart, grew louder. They knew she was coming. and that the future was about to begin. They stood in thigh-deep water so suffused with magic that it felt more like cold fire crackling on Fila's skin. It swirled and eddied with its own strange currents, the color and visual texture of blue silk. Queen Fila luxuriated in that feeling, letting the magic wash over her, breathing it in and reaching out to cloak herself in the sparkling air. Per Ristolo and Per Stellan stood on either side of her, and she could see the emotions playing across their faces. Terror one moment, and ecstasy the next. "Kneel," Per Ristolo said. "Kneel, my queen, before Daphine and Charin, before Betika and Ansalam. Let the four bless you." Fila surrendered to this moment and sank to her knees, the water rising to her throat. Her linen trousers clung to her legs while her long cloak floated up around her like the wings of a falcon. Per Stellan put a hand on her scalp and began to intone the words of a ritual that had become familiar to her by now. But then the words changed. The ritual altered. The charge in the air and the crackling in the water seemed to sheathe her. Queen Fila felt the small hairs on her arms bristle. When she inhaled, she felt weightless, as if not the water but magic itself now buoyed her, so that her flesh and bones were no longer subject to the clutch of the world. "Betika," Per Ristolo said, putting his hand over Per Stellan's, and the ritual continued. The words flowed. The ancient priest threw his head back, and when Fila looked, she saw that tears streamed down his face. "Daphine, Ansalam," Per Stellan said. "Charin." Queen Fila laid her head back. "I open myself to you. My blood is yours. Your blood is mine." More than an hour they had stood in the water in the midst of the tombs. More than an hour to reach this moment, to cleanse herself and to pay obeisance to each of the four in turn. And now to all four at once. With no little astonishment, the queen realized that she too had begun to weep, and to shudder with an ecstasy unlike any she'd felt from the touch of another. She cried out in joy. A flutter of movement drew her attention from the corner of her eye, and she saw Shom moving forward as if concerned she might be in danger. The assassin had come within the curtain of falling water, but no farther, unwilling to move into the midst of the tombs, to be among the four so intimately. She had steeled herself to face any danger without flinching, but this had made even the silent give pause. "Betika," Queen Fila said, beginning to name them as the priests had. The magic rushed into her with such ferocity that she cried out again, this time with no pleasure at all. She coughed once, tried to breathe, but felt her nose begin to bleed and tasted that copper tang on her lips. "Daphine," she went on with a gasp. This time the magic stabbed her deep in her breast, a jolt of pain that penetrated and then spread like a flood of agony within her chest. Fila tried to cry out again, only to have water plunge down her throat. Her eyes snapped open. She hadn't even known that she'd closed them, and she found herself beneath the surface of that glowing, silken, crackling pool. With a roar, she planted her legs and thrust herself up and out of the water, no longer on her knees but still bleeding from her nose, and now from her eyes and ears as well. She wiped at them, and then felt the warm trickle along her inner thigh, and she knew she'd begun to bleed from between her legs as well. The magic raged inside her, churning her guts and rushing through her veins, thundering in her heart as if two lions had gone to war in her chest. Vision blurring, she turned to Per Stellan, reached for her, hands around her throat. "What have you done?" Per Ristolo clasped the queen's short hair and hauled her backward, breaking her hold on his sister priest. Holding her by her hair, he forced Fila to look at him, to focus on him.
Majesty, listen to me. We've made a terrible mistake.
Queen Phila punched him in the temple, knocking him into the water before standing over him, her emotions like the magic of the two gods battling within her. Shom appeared as if from nothing, standing over the priest and ready to kill if her queen commanded it.
Stop! Perstellan shouted. Listen to him. I know you can feel it, Queen Phila. The magic is not balanced. Without harmony, it will tear you apart. Peristolo wants this for you. He wants to bring the magic into the world, to see Qantas become a kingdom that encompasses the entire world, from Dark Horizon to Dark Horizon and beyond. And I, gods help me, I want it too. But you have to believe us. Phila gasped, trying to slow her breathing and quiet the war within her. Again she wiped at the blood dripping from her eyes and nose. It seemed to be slowing, and that calmed her. Perhaps she would not die this very moment. What then? She pointed at Peristolo, who remained crouched in the water, afraid to rise fully in case Shom might carve out his heart, as if she needed the silent to do her killing anymore. You said we've made a mistake. Peristolo's eyes gleamed with the light of faith.
We were foolish to attempt this here. You wanted to be close to the tombs, to be among the four, and I understood that. But with the water so deep, it is impossible to precisely determine the point of harmony. The Axis.
Queen Phila narrowed her eyes. She glanced around the vast chamber, surveyed the tombs, and then she tilted her head back and stared upward. The water rose in tendrils around her, as if it would reach out toward the ceiling of that great subterranean cathedral. A sudden wind appeared, dancing with those tendrils of water. And she knew what she'd felt had been the magics of Daphine and Batika, and that they desired what she desired. She knew it.
The Axis, she echoed.
Yes, Perstellan said.
In the courtyard of the Temple of the Four, the point of harmony in the precise center, where the lines of power from the Four Towers meet.
Queen Phila reached for Peristolo's hand, helping him to rise fully to his feet.
We should have thought of it before.
It's not like we had a precedent, Majesty, Perstellan said.
Ever brazen, Phila thought.
Before she could show the priest her displeasure, Peristolo said,
If there is any hope of succeeding in this, it will be at the temple.
What? Speak!
I worry now. After seeing you bleed, after the pain you've just been through, I fear even you, even one of the blood.
He did not complete his statement. There was no need.
I bleed, yes. But I bleed the blood of the four, and what is left in me is still strong. No. I have other concerns, Queen Phila said. The Temple of Four is full of traitors and blasphemers, your brothers and sisters who refuse to recognize my authority as head of the faith. Euphraxia will have marshaled them by now. We have allies among them, but we must kill all those who stand in the way if we are to complete this ceremony.
The High Order priests, these who had become her servants, knew better than to argue.
Phila glanced at Shom. The others are in place?
Shom nodded, and the queen smiled in return.
Excellent, Phila said.
Then we ascend once more, this time along a more familiar route. Those in the temple will not expect us to rise from beneath them.
And if they are willing to kneel to you, Perstellan said. If they do not fight back.
Queen Phila smiled.
Perhaps you had better spend your time on the way back up, praying that they do.
Deimos stormed across the bridge that separated Temple Hill from Palace Hill, every inch of his back prickling with the anticipation of a blade, his skull singing with the expectation of a cudgel. As far as the rank and file of the city guard knew, his father had been a penter and a traitor, None but Commander Curtinus knew that he'd escaped slavery. The rest likely assumed he'd been freed, but they all knew he had been a slave. A nobleman, son of a baron, heir to one of the five great clans, a warrior on